As one of America's largest financial services companies, Nationwide makes simplicity a priority so financial professionals can help their clients achieve their retirement goals. Nationwide Investment Services Corporation, member FINRA, Columbus, Ohio.
Join Bloomberg in San Francisco or virtually on May 7th for The Future Investor, Data-Powered Transformations. This 2024 event series will examine how data is not only playing a pivotal role in investment decisions, but serves as a driving force behind the construction of innovative investable enterprises. This series is proudly sponsored by Invesco QQQ. Register at BloombergLive.com/futureinvestor/radio.
Welcome to the Bloomberg Surveillance Podcast. I'm Tom Keene, along with Jonathan Farrell and Lisa Abramowitz. Daily, we bring you insight from the best in economics, finance, investment, and international relations. Find Bloomberg Surveillance on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Bloomberg.com, and of course, on the Bloomberg Terminal.
Jay Bryson standing by, the chief economist over at Wells Fargo. Jay, just initially, your reaction to a much, much hotter CPI print.
Well, I think, you know, Mike nailed it earlier. I mean, if there's any doubt at all about 75, they're definitely going 75. And then, you know, Lisa, I think you had a very good comment there as well. What does this mean about November? I mean, we thought they would be stepping it back to November, to 50 in November. And at this point, you would say 75 is certainly right. Going to be on the table there in November.
Jay, how do you take this data, this financialization shock over to the real economy? What does this 830 number signal about potential slowdown in economic growth?
Well, you know, Tom, I think what you're looking at here is there's two things that's going on with the inflation, right? One is that inflation is going to continue to eat into nominal income. And so what we've seen, if you're looking at real disposable income, year over year, at least in July, it was down 3.7%. And so you can't continue to have consumer spending grow if real income is contracting like that. So that's the first problem with inflation. The second problem is it puts the Fed into overdrive. And if they're in overdrive, sooner or later, they're going to make a policy mistake. And if we're talking 75, 75, 75, as far as the eye can see, they're going to make that policy mistake and it potentially could put the economy into recession, which is what we think is going to happen early next year.
Jay, why did almost all forecasters get this wrong?
Well, there's a bunch of volatility on a month by month sort of basis here. We were above consensus, but we weren't at 0.6. I think the big thing here that's really pushing a lot of this, and this is why it's going to be hard to bring inflation down in the near term, is the shelter component. You know, the way they treat shelter, the way they treat housing in here comes in with a long lag. And we all know what's happened over the last year or so. Housing prices have exploded. And it came into the CPI relatively slowly. It's coming in with a vengeance now. The problem is it's going to continue to come in as well. And so that's going to keep the CPI inflation rate elevated for the foreseeable future.
Jay, many Fed officials have given us the impression that what they wanted was two or three softer inflation reports to rethink the trajectory of rate hikes. As Lisa mentioned, and you alluded to it, do you think this really disrupts their ability to say in November that we need to go a different direction?
Well, yeah, I think, obviously we've got a lot of data coming out between here and in November. So, you know, we'll see, right? But, you know, if they want to see two or three soft prints in a row, we've just reset the clock back to zero right now. And so, 75 obviously is on the table, I think, in November. We'll see what happens to the real economy. You know, we'll have, you know, two more employment reports between now and then. That'll be key. So if you do see slowing in the real economy, maybe it backs off. But right now, we haven't seen tremendous amount of slowing in the real economy, and that keeps these supersized rate hikes in play.
Jay, can you tell me where you expect to see unemployment by year end? And at the moment, this Fed, as you know, is very, very focused on the one side of the mandate, bringing inflation lower. We're all trying to work out whether the two sides of the mandate come into more conflict as we get closer to year end.
So our view, John, is at the end of the year, you're looking at an unemployment rate somewhere around 3.7 or so. So I think that's still a very, very tight labor market. Now, as we go into early next year and as we see, deceleration and then contraction in economic activity, I think that's when you see the unemployment rate start to move. But if we're still at 3.7, or let's say we're still below 4%, we still have a 3 handle at the end of this year, I don't think the Fed is slowing down at that point.
What does this say, Jay, about the inertial force of supposed disinflation? I think we're talking about getting to 5 or 4% inflation out there, but do we blow that up today and say simply our path is to get to 7 or 6.9% inflation?
Well, Tom, I do believe that you are going to continue to see. So our view that inflation starts to recede next year is predicated on our view that you do have a recession. And if you do have a recession, then what you do see is goods prices will definitely start to decelerate, as will service prices as well. The good thing, if there's anything that's good here, is that we have not seen inflation expectations become, quote, unmoored. That's a word that the Fed will uses all the time. That's a good thing, because if that does become unmoored, then that creates its own dynamic as well. People start to pull forward their expenditures, which pushes up inflation. They ask for higher and higher wage increases as well. Fortunately, we haven't seen it become unmoored. But if you continue to start to see, prints like this, then you do start to worry about that happening.
Right. For all of you on Bloomberg Radio, Bloomberg Television, Dr. Jay Bryson with us, with Wells Fargo here. A stunning inflation report. John, is that the right word?
I think you can call it that. Stunning. Certainly an upside surprise, Tom.
Stunning inflation report. Futures turn around. I'm doing the math in my head, John. Help me out here. 2.5% flip-flop in what we see
and
on S&P
futures.
And some
on the NASDAQ 100.
Yeah, and some.
We're down 2.4%.
Yeah.
This disrupts the idea that this Fed can back away anytime soon, Tom. It's a bit of a reality.
Well, I'll go with the disruption, or just to say that we got to rip up the script and come up with a whole new dialogue. We do that with Michael McKee, who's dived into the inflation report a little more. Michael, what is the distinction between service dynamic and goods dynamic?
Well, right now it looks like services are starting to pick up some speed here. Services less energy rise by 0.6%. That's after 0.4% last month. And now services are up 6.1% over the year. So we are seeing service prices start to rise. And you can see it in a number of areas. Interestingly, education, tuition, college tuition. It's time for kids to go back to school. And that was up 0.5%, a fairly strong increase for that category.
I'm shocked.
So, yeah. You would know something about that, Tom. We're also seeing motor vehicle insurance up 1.3%. That's been an ongoing issue. And airline fares fell 4.6%, but they had fallen 7.8% the month before. So we're losing a little of the benefit from that. So you are seeing services rise. There was one thing I did want to mention. Somebody asked me this morning if we could mention this, because it matters to senior citizens. The Consumer Price Index for urban wage earners was up 8.7%. We'll have to see what the average numbers come out to be once September's numbers come in, but that will lead into the Social Security COLA. And if you're looking at an 8.7% increase, that's going to be pretty big.
See that? From London, he's looking at me. I'm in London and McKee's looking at me.
Mike McKee, it's good to hear from you, sir. It's great to have you break that down for us alongside Jay Bryson of Wells Fargo. I'm going to totally avoid that and focus on this market.
This is brutal. And again, I'm going to watch the bond space. You're going to see a breakthrough of the total return aggregates of Bloomberg, price lower. We have never seen this before.
David Kelly joins us now to talk about this, the chief global strategist at JP Morgan Asset Management. David, we've given everyone the opportunity to respond to the data so far. Mm-hmm. It's about an hour old now. Your response to it?
It's a little warmer than expected, but I'm not going to call 0.1% of an increase in prices a hot inflation report. What's happening is it's cooling. There are just a few hot spots. There are problems in getting all of inflation to come down, but the cooling trend is there. I think markets are overreacting to this. In particular, there's a big chunk of inflation, the CPI, 32% is in shelter, and that's up 0.7%. And that's really what's driving a lot of the underlying resilience of inflation here. But a lot of that is, owner's equivalent rent. It's a very almost a mythical concept because nobody actually pays owner's equivalent rent. So there are parts of inflation hanging on, but I think it's really important to recognize the economy is cooling here, and a lot of the things that pushed up inflation are cooling off also. So we shouldn't get messed up by the fact that it was a little higher than consensus here. The big story here is inflation is actually coming down.
David, that is convenient for a lot of the bulls, and yet the story that people are seeing right now is that the hope was we would see a much faster disinflation that would get the Fed not perhaps raising rates as much as they were saying. How can you lean against this? What parts of the market are most overreacting from your perspective?
Well, you mentioned financials, and I think what's going on is people are assuming that this will make the Fed a bit more hawkish, and I think that's true. I mean, I think that the Fed will now have more of reason to go 75 basis points next week, and I think that's what they'll do. I think the ECB obviously just did that. I think the Bank of England will do the same. But I think the Fed will also leave the door open to a smaller increase in November, maybe 50 basis points, maybe 25 basis points in December, because what they are going to see is inflation continuing actually to cool, because that's actually what's going on. I think we'll get about 0.2% in the September read. Energy prices are going to be down month over month in September also. I think we'll see the airline fares come down a bit more. I think lodging will come down a bit more. We've got a big increase in tobacco prices. No reason why we get that 2 months in a row. So I just think we're overreacting to this. Yes, it wasn't good news on inflation. It was worse than expected. But the big trend here is coming down. I think financials are overreacting. I have no problem with the 10-year Treasury up near 350. I think that's okay. But I think the assumption that somehow we're not dealing with inflation or it's going to get worse, I think it's just wrong.
What about big tech, Dave? I mean, David, we're looking right now at a 3.1% decline on the NASDAQ. Yeah. It has been a knee-jerk whipsaw lower, and it has had legs. Do you push against that?
Not necessarily. I think you'd have to go stock by stock, because the issue is there were a number of things that were overvalued based if you ever assumed a normal level of real interest rates. And we are getting back to a more normal level of real interest rates, and that is negative for large cap growth stocks, which were standing at very high valuations. So I do get that, and I think it's really more of a return to rationality in a lot of the pricing in markets, and that's no harm. But overall, I'm actually a positive on the equity market, and I'm glad to see so many people bearish, because I think that sets us up to do a bit better over the next few months.
David Kelly, what do you see among corporate earnings? We're really before the gaming of what corporate earnings are doing, but let's get out front with you. How are corporations adapting to America's inflation?
Well, it is difficult. And last year we had a spectacular year for earnings. This year it will be lucky if we end the year with a positive on operating earnings year over year. I think it could be negative next year. I think we're going to see an inflation or an earnings squeeze. I mean, the reality is you've got this growth in wages. That is real. Companies can either pass it on or not. And I think they're going to find it hard to pass it on. And I think that's going to squeeze margins next year. So I do think that whether we have a recession or not, we could end up with negative earnings growth next year.
David, like everyone out there, on my cell phone, I have a real estate dump of whatever geography I'm looking at. Doesn't everybody go out today and mark down the price of their house for sale?
Yes, and it takes a long, long time for that market to clear. But the reality is the average mortgage payment on a new home has gone up by 60% in the last year. And that one I do really blame the Federal Reserve for. They kept rates so low for so long that it caused a surge in prices, and now we can't deal with it. I don't think there's enough people to buy homes when you push the average mortgage rate or average mortgage payment up by 60% in a year.
John, I think this is just absolutely profound. I can't say enough about sector to sector in inflation, the different elasticities that are out there on home ownership and how it redounds over to rent, multifamily nationwide. Every region's different. Guess what? This report is a game changer.
And core inflation came in hotter than expected, and shelters are one of the most stickiest part of the report when it comes to inflation. And David, I appreciate what you're saying, that things might be getting better, perhaps not worse. But when you think about what the Fed will do, not what they should do, mm-hmm. David, can you talk to me about what you expect they will do? They've laid out their reaction function. They've told us how they respond to incoming information. Tell us what you think that means for what they will do.
Well, I think what they'll do is they'll go 75 basis points next week. But I do think that in the press conference and perhaps in the statement, they will acknowledge the fact that inflation has cooled somewhat. But they'll say, you know, two data points are not good enough to call it a trend yet. So they'll have some caution there, but they'll put enough doubt in there to give them the space to only go 50 basis points in November. So I think they want to set it up that way. They want to put in a hawkish move, but give themselves the opportunity then to put in more dovish language without being labeled as being soft in inflation. But you know, again, I would focus on, you know, this shelter thing. Yeah, it's a long lagging problem in inflation. But if you think about it, how does higher interest rates help deal with a shelter inflation problem? I mean, if it stops people from building houses, how are you going to bring down rents? So it's
that's the problem.
The one thing they're most worried about, or the one thing that's keeping inflation high, is the thing that they can fix the least by pushing up interest rates.
There you go.
David Kelly of JP Morgan Asset Management.
Nobody ever says make it complicated. That is why Nationwide makes simplicity a priority by providing financial professionals with straightforward, client-ready resources. From clear strategies to help clients meet retirement savings and income needs, to ways to cover rising healthcare costs and more. Nationwide simplifies planning so more time can be spent helping clients. Nationwide is on your side. Nationwide Investment Services Corporation, member FINRA, Columbus, Ohio.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal wherever you get your podcast.
And watch on Bloomberg Originals, Bloomberg Television, or BTV Plus.
The message is a little cloudier in markets. Essie Dweck, CIO of FlowBank, joining us now. We are seeing NASDAQ down 2.9%, a reset of the idea of a disinflationary tilt that we thought would take hold but didn't. Are you rethinking any of your positions today?
Well, it was never going to be a straight line down. We have a number of inflation data points that are still showing that disinflation is happening. Clearly, the core print for today was not fantastic, and we're seeing the disappointment in markets, especially because we had that expectations in the last couple of days that really ramped up and boosted markets. From a positioning perspective, we still have PPI tomorrow. We have the Michigan numbers coming up at the end of the week. We had inflation expectations in the last couple of days showing us that those have come down quite sharply as well. So I think the disinflation trend is going to continue, but for today, it's definitely going to be ugly.
John, we're getting in the numbers right now. Peter Bookfire has one of the isolated incidents. Health insurance up 24% year over year.
Services.
Services is the distinction feature.
Without a doubt. Esty, with that in mind, we've got this tug of war between financial conditions and what is happening with the data and how the Fed is responding to it, and investors who are hoping all of this goes away and next year it's smooth sailing. What's your message to people that still doubt the resolve of this Federal Reserve?
Well, there wasn't going to be a pivot, and there clearly isn't going to be a pivot anytime soon. I think Jackson Hole dispelled that idea completely. Anything close to a pivot would just mean we're going to stop hiking, and that, you know, happens at some point in 2023. And how many more percentage they get in before that, that number is going up, of course, with the November expectations rising as well. But the Fed isn't going to blink. Inflation is gradually coming down, slower than anyone would like, but their resolve is going to be very firm.
Mm-hmm. Esty, where do I hide? Just as simple as that. My head is spinning. This report wasn't what I expected. Where do I hide to drag myself into 2023?
So I think it's a bit too early to say that the entire end of the year is going to be bad. I think at some point we are going to have some improvement in markets. For the time being, it feels really like the dollar is a great place to hide. The Swiss franc, you were talking earlier about the Swiss National Bank coming in with those hikes. So Swiss franc probably is another place to hide. But you're making something in cash. And I think a lot of investors are going to be happy to sit in cash and wait for the picture to improve, hopefully, over the next couple of weeks.
Esti, thank you. Esti Dweck there at Flow Bank.
Right now, let's look at oil. We do this with Regina Mayer, global head of energy at KPMG, steeped in all of the game theory of her Rice University. Regina, I want to focus on the game theory right now of President Biden in one chart I just saw in passing, which is our so-called strategic oil reserve. And the proper scientific word for this is the volume we have in reserve has truly cratered. What does that mean for America?
I do think we've probably reached a tipping point where it's time to focus on refilling the strategic petroleum reserve because it is at an all-time low. And I think we're sort of out of the woods from a U.S. energy price pressure that was driving inflation and the things that I know the politicians were worried about coming into the midterms, and that was the price at the pump. We've seen gasoline prices in the U.S. consistently go down and down and down. So I believe, if anybody was taking my advice, it's time to start focusing on restocking our SPR and getting a little above where it is today.
Can you get out the Kufelet-S or slide rules at KPMG and tell me how much a gallon of gas is going to go up as President Biden restocks that reserve? Are we going up 20 cents a gallon, 52 cents a gallon? What's that statistic?
No, I think we're out of the woods on gas prices, Tom. I mean, I think that, you know, we've done with summer driving season. We've got quite a lot of stock. The refineries are up and running again. I'm less worried about what that would do immediately to gas prices. I will say that what the administration did with regard to releasing fuel from the SPR was one of the key things that the energy industry will say made a material difference in the summer peak season than when we saw gasoline prices at their peak in June.
Regina, that's the story over in the United States. You're in Portugal right now, in Lisbon, and we're in London, and the focus very much is on energy, and it's a very different and multi-pronged concern because it's not all gasoline or crude. It's natural gas. It's some of the issues with nuclear energy over in France. From your perspective, is the plan that's coming to shape from the European Union of trying to cap demand while also providing profits from the energy companies to households, does this make sense? Does it feel feasible to you?
At least I think that the EU's already made quite a bit of progress. So we have seen European gas prices drop. We're at a 7-week low, and it's 40% off its peak on August 26th. It's still 8 times higher than normal, but there are bright spots. Gas storage is up 84% right now, and it's slightly above where they would have expected to be for the 5-year average. The countries have been working on securing as much supply as possible. Now they're looking at packages to reduce demand and to cap what that would do to household income. It's going to cost a lot of money. There's got to be national budgets are going to be strained. So it's got to be a lot of different things that happen. I would not say they're out of the woods, because if it's a particularly cold winter and if we see Asian demand start coming back in where cargoes of LNG are priced up in a competitive way, that's where things get really critical again. So not out of the woods, but the things that they have been doing in the near term are having a measurable impact.
Okay, so Regina, could you just build that out a little bit, a measurable impact in that we are seeing natural gas prices come down significantly. But is that impact going to lower them further as they are still 8 times higher than where they were a year ago? Or is it going to just keep them here, keep it just sort of a persistent crisis rather than something that is much more acute and immediately needing to be addressed?
Definitely. We're not out of the woods. And I think that the pullback in the recent days is probably over amplified with what's happening in Ukraine. I think maybe there's a little bit of irrational exuberance about what happened, and maybe some people thinking, okay, the war might be over and we can stop weaponizing gas. I don't anticipate that at all. So while the measures are important, And what I see the EU working on is a comprehensive package, because you have to work on both demand and supply. No doubt it's having a material impact, and it will have a material impact on the economy. I'm hearing from some executives here in Portugal that their energy costs are in some cases $1 billion over, right, what their expected energy costs are. All of that's going to have a material impact on earnings, competitiveness, and they're going to shut down factories because it's too expensive to run them.
We're already seeing that, and we could see a whole lot more going deeper into winter. Regina Mather of KPMG out of Lisbon, Portugal today.
This is the Bloomberg Surveillance Podcast. Thanks for listening. Join us live weekdays from 7 to 10 a.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Radio and on Bloomberg Television each day from 6 to 9 a.m. for insight from the best in economics, finance, investment, and international relations. And subscribe to the Surveillance Podcast on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Bloomberg.com, and of course, on the Terminal. I'm Tom Keene, and this is Bloomberg.
The countdown has begun. This May, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum, powered by Bloomberg, held in conjunction with our official partners, the Qatar Ministry of Commerce and Industry and Media City Qatar, and premier sponsor QNB. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections and gain unique insights. Learn more at QatarEconomicForum.com.